broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, intergalactic prairie studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins. Keep a synth flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Nick? Speak up, son.
Sorry.
As always, Freedom Beans is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, we are back again. I am Jeremy, joined tonight by Nick. Gonna stay with us and actually speak up, son.
Yes.
There you go. That's better. So, anyway... Yeah, how you doing, man? Hadn't talked to you forever, and then all of a sudden, I did your show, you did my show, and now here we are again. Not even a couple of weeks later, right? Heck, I just put that other show out a couple of days ago, so.
Yeah, man. I don't know. It just happens. It's weird. I've been doing more podcasting recently, too. I guess I didn't do Fiend shows before October for a while.
Well, yeah, you were on sabbatical. I think Michael had you listed on sabbatical for like most of the summer because, you know, you're too busy doing yak stuff. And
Yeah. But now I've been doing more podcasting and a little bit more radio recently.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess, life gets in the way of important things to do. We understand, but.
That's right. I have to make money. I have to try to make money. That's the problem. But I don't know how you do late nights and work. I don't like it. Like, I probably could if I wanted to. And if I, like, planned more naps or something, but I don't like staying up this late as very often, at least. I can do it every once in a while. It's no problem.
Yeah, it's not ideal. And these days I'm not working as much, but I did it for quite a while. I just kind of got used to it. It became, you know, it was also convenient for me at the time that I was working. But, like, you know, if I do the Sunday night shows, it used to be, even when I was working full-time, my Mondays, most days, didn't necessarily have to start until about noonish. So I could get away with sleeping until like 11, you know, going to bed at 4 a.m. and then sleeping until like 11 a.m. and then getting up and rushing out the door really quick. So wasn't that bad. You know, most of the time my kids weren't here on those days. So I made do, you know, and plus I'm old. Yeah, plus I'm old, so naps are, more comforting these days. So I don't mind taking naps. You know, I used to feel bad about taking naps because I felt like I was missing out. Now that I'm old, I'm like, whatever, you know. Naps are nice.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I was talking to Daryl Becker, and he was talking about, like, maybe I wasn't teasing him, but we were talking about him doing the shows and like he ends the show at 10 and he says, yeah, it's kind of an inconvenience. And I said, what? I end the show at midnight and that's a pain. And then some people start at 1. They start at 1 a.m. And like you said, you end at 4.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, I don't know what he's complaining about. Unless yeah, no, I mean, I think he's a little older than me. I mean, what is he? He's one of those people who gets up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, then I guess I could understand it. Then it might be inconvenient. Yeah, I could. I don't think I could ever start my day at that. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I think I used to have to start my day at that early at one point. Yeah, back when I was driving a bus way back in the day. But I would never usually willingly start my day at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That would be annoying. I don't like getting up when it's dark.
Yeah, that's something that kind of, I don't know, it just adds everything to it. Even if I get like a decent amount of sleep beforehand, it just kind of makes you even more tired when you wake up and realize the sun's not even out yet. I know back in the day when I used to go fishing, that was like the ideal thing to do. You had to go out during those times, but it was like, oh man, I just want to go back to bed.
Yeah, I guess like, I don't, why is that? Do they, like the fish like to be out or something during that time?
I don't remember what it was. I just, you know, my grandfather, because I haven't done it in forever, but my grandfather was big on it. So long before I moved up here to New York. whenever I would come visit him, that was something we would do regularly. Like, my dad would drag me out with him, and my grandpa, and sometimes my uncle, and maybe one of my other cousins or something. But yeah, it was always like, whatever it was, like, I can't even remember what we were, there was a particular fish we were going for at certain times. But I just, I always remember, like, we had to get woken up at, like, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So we were getting out the door, like, by, like, no, you know, and of course, if you're moving slow, you're getting yelled at, because we're going to be late. It's like, we're going to miss the fish. It's like, we're going to the ocean, aren't we? I'm pretty sure there's a lot of them. I think we may find something out there, but, yeah, I don't remember exactly what it is, but
yeah,
definitely not for... Yeah, I don't know. Although I'm saying all these things, yeah, I don't know. This isn't for me. Waking up early, all this stuff. You know. Meanwhile, I've been talking about starting a farm forever now. It's like, yeah, I guess I am probably gonna have to start a little bit earlier than I'm accustomed to. That may finally put my fiend shows in jeopardy, or at least doing my two times a week. You know, that may make it a little more difficult because, you know, like I said. Even on the rare occasion when I've had to get up at, you know, there's been times when I've had a job at 7:30 in the morning, you know, after doing a show. But most of those times I usually manage to sneak in like an hour or two nap before the show. So it's not too bad if I crash back out for like three and a half hours. I mean, I still don't feel wonderful. I still wake up feeling like I want to like either just fall back over or hit somebody. But as long as I get a little caffeine in me, I can usually drag myself out and, you know, although I do usually have the advantage of coming back home after that to at the very least relax for a little bit longer. But yeah, I can imagine trying to do, like, you know, the actual farm life, getting up that early after doing a show. I may not want to do it too much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I can sometimes get away with, like, staying in till 9, but as soon as that sun's up, I like to be awake. That's because, like, especially these days when it gets dark at 4, like, man, that's a pain. When I get up at 9, I'm like, no, I don't have enough time. And I have to hustle, but you know, I like to get up earlier and it is nicer, but I don't know. I've gotten away with farming and it depends on how you do it. If it's in the summer, you have plenty of daylight. It doesn't matter. But if you're restricted, then you do kind of have to get up with it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm thinking, especially where I plan on going, you know, it's somewhere in Indiana. It's daylight hours are relatively, I guess, similar to what I'm dealing with here now. Just shifted a little bit because this is another time zone over. But other than that, yeah, I'm still probably going to have to get up. But that's all right. I mean, as much as I complain about it, I know myself. I actually do better in life when I'm a little more regimented. You know, even if I feel at some level that I'm like forced into it, at least if I have more of a schedule, I definitely do better. I like to be a free, you know, a free thinker and a free learner and all that stuff. But yeah, I can get sucked into being my lazy self a lot if I'm given too much free time, you know.
Definitely, man. I get that. But yeah, you just start eating bison and you'll be able to probably deal with it. Primarily, you can live on that bone broth and
bison. There you go. That reminds me. I have, well, not bison, but I do have some grass-fed beef bones. I got to get back and make some more broth. I ran out, and I just haven't felt like doing it the past week or so.
Yeah, it's a. How do you have a pressure cooker?
Yeah, not a big one. It's only like a 6-quart one. So
okay, that's not very big now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent size, but it's, you know, it makes, you know, actually, I think by the time I actually put everything in there, I think I only walk away with like 2.5 quarts worth of actual broth out of it, you know, once the bones and the, although I keep everything because, you know, I make a basic one with just like, you know, carrots and celery and onions and whatnot, sure. But I keep all that stuff afterwards. And then usually my kids think I'm weird. Because I eat that, like, they don't understand, like, separating it from the soup part.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I just keep the, you know, I also can't get the...
I like doing that, too.
Yeah.
I don't usually eat it because it doesn't have much flavor. I feed it to the pigs, but...
Yeah, so like the carrots sometimes I give to Murder Dog because she likes carrots. So sometimes I'll mash those up in her food and stuff. But it actually, you know, you throw a little bit of, you know, throw a little Himalayan salt on top of it or something. It still retains some of the flavor from the, you know, is, you know, I usually save like
a couple
of teaspoons of the broth and save it in there, and you know it's still pretty relatively healthy just eating a bowl with carrots and celery and onions and stuff, but of course my kids just make faces at me because I mean I've definitely made them stuff with onions in it, but they've never actually really tasted an onion. And the only thing they know is like it's something their mommy says whenever they say the word onion, mommy goes ew because you know their mom doesn't really like onions. So that's what they equate it to. So that for them to see me sitting there just eating a bowl with like just giant pieces of onion in it, I'm like, whatever, it's good, man. They don't get it.
It is.
Yeah.
I like making that stuff. Yeah. I was probably just as picky. I bet I was back then, but now I don't care.
I mean obviously you go through changes with that. I think, what is it, every 7 years I think your taste buds change, something like that they say.
I guess you're right.
So you know there was things I didn't like when I was a kid. I don't even remember what most of them are, but do I hear music? No, not yet. I'm like, wait a minute. We're still like a minute away. I'm hearing the music in my head. I've been doing this way too long. But anyway, I lost where I was going with that.
I don't know. We were talking about bone broth.
Yeah, yeah.
And eating onions. I can't. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah. But oh yeah, food. I don't like
bone broth stuff.
It is, man. It's good stuff. It's like I said. I think I told you that before. I replaced my coffee with it in the winter for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Which, I mean, it's definitely like it's in my head. I know I'm not getting the same boost from the caffeine, but it feels that way. So, I run with it.
Sure, yeah, dude. If it works, it works.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like I said, it tastes good. You know, you gotta get used to like the little greasy effect of it at first because it, you know, it's not a. It's, no matter how good you skim it, you still end up with a little bit of fat in there. But I don't care, man. Tastes good. It's good for you, and definitely helps when you're sick. So we'll talk more about this and other things when we get back from the market.
Worms. You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
And we're back. I was just trying to pay attention to the clock and going, oh, all right, we're about to get back. And just as I heard the music kick in, I look over, I see my dog. My dog is so bizarre. I she pouts when I don't let her on the bed with me. You know, because you know, sometimes I let her sleep up there with us. Sometimes it's just, you know, don't really need her to be there at the time. And she sits there and pouts, and I have a couple of beds laid out in different places for her, but she got mad for the longest time because she wasn't, I guess the beds weren't fluffy enough for her because she's getting older now. And I guess she's looking for a little more comfort, where she used to be just fine with a bed that would, you know, like an old comforter or something, but it would flatten out after a while because she's using it constantly. But that would be fine. She didn't care as long as she had something under her. But now she like looks for nice softer things, so like we gave her a comforter that we had been using but she had taken a liking to, And then I got her another one for downstairs because she was mad at me that the bed that I had in this room wasn't, I guess, soft enough for her. But I just looked over at her, and she's moved the thing over now, and now she's back to sleeping on the hard tile floor, but she's wedged between the giant fluffy blanket and the baseboard heater. And I don't understand how she's not panting at this point, because I'm hot as all heck in this room right now. I think I was talking about with this with John the other night. It's the weirdest thing. Like, it's cold as, it's like, you know, I don't even know what temperature is. It's got to be, you know, maybe 10, 15 degrees outside right now at the most. And my house doesn't hold heat the best because of the way it was designed, you know, back on the cheap, on the cheap, back in the 40s, in the late 40s, with some suspect building material. And just some sections of the house stay warmer than others. And unfortunately, my studio is one of the ones that stays ridiculously warm no matter what I have the heat at. So I think the house, the temperature in the house is only like 60, it's supposed to be 68 degrees on this level, right on the main level right now. And I'm just like, I'm boiling in my room, even with the window open in this weather.
Dang.
Yeah. I need to get out of here, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I kind of wish I had that problem, but I think it's better to be too cold than to be too hot. Because you can get warmer if you're cold, right? But it is really hard to get cold.
Exactly. That's usually my thing. You can always put more layers on, you know. I mean, I've differed with that with Jen the entire time, the entire length of our relationship, because she's not somebody who likes the cold very much. And with her arthritis, unfortunately, she likes it even less. But I was always the type of person, like, if it was just me here, especially back in the day when it was just me and the dogs in this house, I would regularly keep the heat like ridiculously low, to the point when people came to visit me, they would actually like make comments about it. I think I may have mentioned this at one point on the show too, a while ago, that even in the house that I rented before this, it was even worse, to the point where the oil company actually called me and left a message at one point threatening to discontinue my service because I was using such a little amount of oil that they just naturally assumed that I was some kind of slumlord who was renting out who was renting out my place and like just eking out the oil to my tenants and like basically trying to like freeze them out or something. It was the most bizarre call I had ever gotten. I was like, what? Really? They apologized later on because, you know, there's some kind of, you know, miscommunication. Apparently, that's what they claim. Well, I actually called up and yelled at him. I'm like, really? I'm like, I'm sitting here trying to be frugal and you're yelling at me about being a slumlord. I'm like, what's the big deal? I live in a, not, you know, it's basically, you know, actually, yeah, it was basically the same house I live in now. So it's like, I live in a 920 square foot apartment at the time. I'm like, it's just me. I can throw on a sweater if I need to, you know, like, or a sweatshirt. It's all good, you know. It's not a big deal keeping the heat low. I don't get it, you know. But now that I have kids and stuff, it's a little different. I understand, you know. It's not everybody's built like me, so not everybody can tolerate that type of stuff. Although my kids actually they're pretty, you know, they complain that they're cold sometimes, but they also love running around barefoot on the tile floors everywhere. I'm like, you realize that doesn't help with the fact that you're cold right now, right?
Yeah, that's how you get cold.
Yeah, you throw on a pair of slippers or something or some socks, you'll feel a little better. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I don't know. I in my trailer, it can get pretty cold, but I've got a heater that keeps it right about 20 degrees above wherever, whatever it is.
So no, it's 30. Are.
It's not too bad.
There you go. Well, I'm going to try to cool off during this trip to the market, and hopefully I'll feel better when I get back.
My arms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
And we're back. And as we rolled into the last break, the first thing I heard was this commercial for Cell 411, which was actually kind of ironic because I meant to mention that during the last segment. We're going to give a quick shout out to Cell 411, which, of course, is the wonderful application that everybody should have if you don't already, which is free on both iPhone and Android. You can get it at getcell411.com. And it's the wonderful app that allows you to program in a select number of individuals for a what's called a cell, or you can select a public cell and alert people when you're having an issue, whether it's a medical emergency, fire, whether you're being bullied by a normal citizen or by the police, and allows you to reach them instantaneously. Rather than calling the cops, which obviously automatically lowers the risks of things like, your dog getting shot and stuff like that. So that's a big bonus. And of course, it has the other things like it's a ride sharing app too now, which
oh,
is
really
yeah. I'm a huge yeah. You didn't know that? Yeah, it's yeah. I think it was the last thing they added was the ride sharing capability to kind of compete with Uber and Lyft. And I think it does a much better job than that right off the bat, because not only does, Cell 411 not get a cut of it at all, it's supposed to be a facilitator between the driver and the person who needs a Lyft. So Cell 411 doesn't get a cut, and you can make the transaction in any currency or even barter if necessary that you and the driver can work out. So it's not limited to things like, cash or credit cards and stuff like that, like Uber and Lyft would be. Nah, man, you want to pick somebody up and they're willing to take cryptocurrency or gold or silver or goat, whatever. Mm-hmm. You can work it out. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's why I'm a big fan of their ride sharing over, for me that was the kicker right away. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, oh, you could pay anyway. I mean, obviously for me I was thinking cryptos originally, but even barter too. It's like, yeah, whatever you can work out. And that's great, because that's something I had looked into getting into driving for Uber or Lyft at one point. Unfortunately, my papers are not in order, I guess, according to Big Daddy Government. So they kind of banned me from that, and I was kind of down. I was kind of down on both companies for a while. And then when Cell 411 added the ride sharing thing, I was like, oh, I don't need you guys anymore anyway, man. I'll just use Cell 411. So even if I need one, I'll go there first instead of going to Uber or Lyft if I'm looking for a Lyft. So
sweet. And can you get one pretty often?
Yeah, I haven't had a problem when I've called. Sweet. So I'm sure depending on where, if you're in a super rural area, it may be a little more difficult.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, right. But I would probably have a hard time getting an Uber out here.
Yeah, so exactly. You'd be a little SOL regardless, but yeah. Overall it's definitely a good thing. And of course, with Cell 411, with the addition of the ride sharing, you can get all these other wonderful services, which is actually designed for, like I said, basically being able to contact people, friends, family, neighbors at the touch of a button, and have them react a lot quicker than any government service possibly could. And the cool added feature of having video where you can automatically start recording any incident, anything that's going on, and it gets stored on the cell 411 servers. So even if somebody were to, say, try to grab your phone and break it or attempt to delete the footage in order to protect themselves, well, you don't have to worry about that because it automatically gets stored in the cell 411 servers and you could just go retrieve it later. So even if they, you know, I don't know, I think I've seen cops be they have a habit of trying to do stuff like that. So that stops them in their tracks. Anyway, get cell411.com. Like I said, if you don't have it already, go check it out. It's free. Why not? Anyway, so we were talking before I went into my little rant about my dog and the heat and how I'm sweating to death over here in the last second. We were talking about the whole, you know, getting up early and stuff before, and the, you know, whole farming thing, which kind of actually leads into I guess the conversation we were going to have for the large part tonight, which was a topic you brought to us, Nick, about how you're thinking about, well, maybe becoming a communist, right? I'm kidding, of course, but why don't you tell me about what you that piece you sent me earlier?
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to somebody this weekend, one of the people that used to work at the, or maybe she still works at the school, but the school I used to go to, and she is on my farm newsletter, and she and I wrote a newsletter about community and how I think it's pretty important, and I just talked a little bit about the history of the culture, and why I think that there's not as much of a connection to community anymore. And it's like, well, you said something totally different. Like, you were totally a rugged individual back when you were in high school. You didn't even think that we should have social programs for the poor. And I'm like, well, you know, I think she said that, you know, I went further than that. And maybe at the time I did, like saying that, you know, we should just cut everybody off and let it be a survival of the fittest. But
everybody for themselves.
Right. But, you know, so I had this conversation with her. Well, no, I don't believe that anymore. And I don't believe in social programs necessarily, but I do believe in having a community-based system that's kind of, I don't know, maybe not community-based, but, you know, I like the idea of working together. There's something about having a tribe, I guess, you know, and I think that there's obvious dangers in that, and that's why I became an anarchist in the first place. It's because I was interested in being an individual and being respected as an individual, and I think that's extremely important. But I also think that the community angle is important too, because just on the fact of division of labor, it's great to have a larger community, like more people, because more people can provide more value and can do more things. And then it also has, you know, there's just emotional benefits to that too, I guess. But I don't think I'm a communist. I'm not quite that already, but I am like willing to give up on, I don't know. I don't want to say give up on private property, but I'm willing to share. I guess that's what I'm saying a little bit more than I used to be. And I'm wondering where the balance is, and that's what I kind of wanted to talk about tonight. Like, where's the balance between keeping your stuff safe and being able to help out other people?
Yeah. And well, yeah, because like the one thing you said in the email, and you kind of touched on it before, is like, you know, it's the fact that, you know, libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism, things like that, like they're founded on like the individual. So it's like, you know, it's funny because it's actually a straw man that's kind of created against libertarianism a lot. Like, oh, you don't care about anybody, you just care about people, you know, you just care about yourselves, and you don't care about the community and stuff like that, which isn't true. But I guess I kind of got what you were saying, you know, reading through that email really quick, because I felt the same way too. Like when I first came to all this stuff, it was very much like, you know, not that I was straight out, you know, oh, just me, you know, everything about me for myself and, you know, screw everybody else type of thing. But I could see where that straw man, that stereotype would get created, because it can kind of seem that way, because everybody's always going on and on about the individual, and often talking down about, you know, about socialism and communism for the, you know, the obvious reasons, like historically it's been bad. But yeah, I get what you're saying, because I've gone through that too, where I've obviously been called a commie for a lot of different reasons, but I have seen that value too, and I've actually, you know, that's kind of one of the main reasons I've wanted to get the heck out of New York and go somewhere else. And, you know, my whole goal wasn't just to start a farm. I was also looking to do like an intentional community type thing, which would work, I guess, you know, a lot on these type of levels, where it would be, you know, everybody would have, you know, my ideal thing was everybody would have their individual space. Everybody could have their own little, you know, private property, whatever, their land, but then still be close enough where we can all work together and, you know, share labor like you were talking about. Maybe even go so far, like I hadn't thought it out that fully, but maybe even go so far to like that one piece that you sent to me about, you know, the communal living, to where they actually have, you know, communal areas where everybody does have their private space, but then you have areas where everybody gets together and, you know, eats food, you know, eats meals together and stuff a couple times a week. And then you just, all those areas, you take, everybody takes turns cleaning and stuff like that. So it is like, you can think of it in terms, if you want to be, be an a-hole about it, I guess, like, you know, in public property terms, but that's basically it is, you know, communal area, which I have less and less of a problem with as I go on in my life, you know. I don't know. Maybe I'm turning into a commie too, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I don't think I was ever really opposed to the idea of community like that, because I've always liked the idea of the Free State Project, and that's kind of the idea of it, right? Is to gather a group of people who like liberty and take over the legislature or change the culture. And I think that's pretty natural. I think we want to group each other or group up with people who are like us and have the same values. And I think what the issue for me was is I was just very sensitive about group dynamics because I guess I understand what it is to be swept up in the crowd, you know, just because we're anarchists, you know, it's what we're looking at. We're watching, oh yeah, there's collectivism. And just being more sensitive to that, I think kind of made me a little bit more adverse to working with other people that didn't have the same opinion as me on especially politics. But I think I have, like, I've slowly become a little bit more interested in working with other people. But I still have the individual thing, and I think that we'll talk about it more next
worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigi-est place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, MeowBit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
So we're back, and we were talking about commie stuff when we had the last break, but yeah, I don't know. I think you were talking when we went into the break. Do you remember where you left off, Nick?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was talking about I guess one of the things that I've been thinking about recently is, because at first when I started this farm, I kind of wanted it to be my individual project. I'm going to be the yak farmer guy. But I found out that's really difficult. And it's easier to take on some help because people just want to help out. There are just people who do want to. And I guess I'm just looking at, yeah, the stuff that I could do if there were more people working. So I'm looking at, well, how do I bring on more people? And I don't, like, the thing is, like, with communism, I feel like the value of the labor is kind of a sort of a thing, right? But it didn't really turn out that way in the Soviet Union.
No.
I wonder what, like, there's state communism, right? And then there's hippie communism. And is that what I'm talking about, building a commune? And I don't think it is, because I want to be the dictator, right? I'm not going to make this a democratic thing.
Yeah, you're looking, you're currently looking at, well, I'm assuming what you're looking to do is hire people, not bring in partners, right? At least currently. Right. Yeah. So yeah, you would, yeah, you're definitely going to be the dictator. You're definitely going to be the communist dictator, not the, not the hippie type of commune.
Right. but like my, so I'd like to see if I can not pay people as much as I can, like make it valuable in another way. Cause you know, I just don't have money right now, but I'm looking to see if I can make it more valuable. Just as that communal space and provide it through food. But I've got a ways to go for that. And I'm like kind of looking at some people who want to do like projects locally with me. So I'm like, okay, let's just do it. I'll help you out. You help me. And I'd like to do more and more of that. Like there are just so many other people. Like I really, we talked about Drew Sample earlier. Like I really like, or maybe that was off air. I don't know.
We're talking about during the break.
but he's doing that with his Ohio GSD crew. I don't think we can say one of those words on. Oh, get stuff done. That's the. I like that. His Ohio GSD crew. I want to do that with some people nearby because I think it could be possible. But it's just, you know, coordination. It's hard. Like that's part of why it's hard to be, do these more community things too. Is it takes time to organize people because everybody's doing their own thing, you know. But I think it would be really cool to do more of that. And I'd like to take a slower approach and not throw it in, yeah, and have a bunch of people just come and live on my property for nothing. That would suck, but I'd like it to be more organized and of course it's not actually my property, right? It's my parents, so they would be the dictators ultimately.
But yeah, well, you know, for now, you know, eventually it'll be, you know, the land will be bequeathed to you, and then you're in charge, and then you have to keep it up, you know, and the whole monarchy mm-hmm. thing. That's how it works, right?
Exactly. Eventually, yeah. I'll have feudal. I'll build a feudal society.
Sweet. No, I get what you're saying, though. And I'm actually that Drew Sample and what he's doing out there is a big part of the reason why I wanted to shift out of here and actually go in that area. You know, that's originally where I was looking to go in Ohio, and I was actually going to look to hook up with him. But, you know, I think you're going about it correctly if you're saying you want to, you know, do everything slowly with that. Because, sure, you got to, you know, first of all, you have to connect with other people. But on one hand, sure, life gets in the way and it becomes, people are busy with their own stuff. But, you know, there definitely is value, especially, you know, when you're talking about a lot of people who may be getting into this type of thing or have been in this type of lifestyle for a little while. And maybe hurting for money and, you know, for some reason. Sure, it's a lot cheaper if you have more hands doing stuff and, you know, you help me, I help you, that type of thing. Pay it forward type of stuff. Definitely has its advantages. So, that's what I'm looking to do too when I get out of here. So, I think it's good stuff, man. But we'll have to talk more about it in the second hour. Because we're running out of time here. But don't you worry, folks. More commie stuff when we come back. Michael's going to love the fact that he's left for so long. He's going to come back and go, what the heck happened to my show?
I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments and their agents. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. And we're talking about communism and the slow descent commie towards it. Yeah. But we're talking about this. It's the last hour. We're talking about, I got sent this article by somebody in my local area. We're having a discussion about community organization, and we're talking about this article kind of specifically. What is this? Where is this from? This is from PBS. It's about co-housing communities help prevent social isolation, and it's mainly focused on talking like multi-generational communities where there are kids and old people and, you know, young couples and older couples, you know, all living in a setting where they're interacting regularly, I guess. That's kind of the idea, where some of the stuff is shared, but they're close by and they're trying to interact regularly. And I think that's what I want. I want like I like the idea of having things to do around, because I or like people. Does that make sense? No, I don't know. I'm saying it right. But I like for there to be people around, but not too close, I guess, is what I'm trying to get to. Like, I like the village setting, and I like kind of what they talked about, how everybody has their own space, their own house, their own necessities that they have. They have their kitchen, their own refrigerator and stuff. They're not sharing the food or their cars or whatever. But they all have that communal space that occasionally they come to, like we talked about, and they're interacting, and the kids are playing in the street, and everybody, you know, is talking to everybody. I like that idea, and I think that as we've become industrialized, and especially in the United States, I think that there's a little bit different relationships, especially with the family. Like in Europe, and particularly Italy and Greece is where I hear this about, the Mediterranean areas, that there's a really strong familial ties where people still interact with their families because, you know, they've been there for thousands of years. They've kind of built a culture where America hasn't really. It's a new culture of people who all left from from Europe and all over the world, and those were the people who didn't, you know, they didn't have that, at least a strong enough attachment to their family to keep them there. You know, the people that left because they were being persecuted by the main people, the group, you know, or they needed a better economic opportunity, and some of them tried to keep that family ties, I guess, and live in like the extended family unit. But that American culture, kind of Puritanism, and Thaddeus Russell talks about this a little bit, or quite a bit, in his books, and it's about the history of the United States, the renegade history of the United States is his book. And I think that's a really interesting kind of looking at, like, how is that built, like that Puritan angle. You know, those are the people oppressed by the group, and then it's this kind of individualism, kind of enlightenment thought of the founding fathers. And there's, you know, there's definitely weird contradictions and stuff in there with the individualism aspect. But there's that focus of kind of working as, and the kind of, I guess I'm trying to set this. I'm thinking two things at once. I'm thinking like the phenomena that's happening is you know, I think that the a lot of social pressures and even like from the progressives, and I'm going conspiracy, but Thaddeus Russell talks about that too. Is that there's been some social engineering and just kind of in the culture, this idea of separating from the familial ties to a more secular state focus, and that's what the progressives want, and that's what the communists did in the Soviet states, the Soviet Empire. That's that, and communist China, right? The state became God, and they killed the family, right? The state became the family. That was the idea, and I think that. That's been, it's not, like, I don't want to say that it's totally gone. I think everybody has somewhat of a relationship with their family. But, you know, as the state keeps adding gears into when kindergarten starts, or when, you know, now they're trying to get preschool, and they're, you know, they're just trying to keep kids in school more and more. I think that has to do, I don't want to be conspiracy minded. It doesn't matter whether it's on purpose, right? But I do think that there is, you know, a little bit of a movement to move away from being a community, or being so more focused on a decentralized level, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that has been going on for a very long time. And it's also, I think it's easy to do that too, with also there's, you know, the, especially the state, I guess, and you don't even have to be conspiratorial to just, you know, recognize this is a truth that, you know, that the state in general, you know, no matter which one it is, loves to create distrust among the citizenry, you know, which is why they try to keep each other at their throats all the time. So like with that, with constantly having everybody distrusting one another, it definitely makes it a lot harder to have a lot of community in general, because, you know, why are you going to want to be friends with and help out people that you think may be out to hurt you, or even if they just disagree with you? That's how, you know, how far we've come, unfortunately, especially these days. with the way people are, you know, with the advent of social media and everything, and how people just yell at each other all the time over a difference of opinion, and basically want to write off an entire whatever the opposing view is. It's really hard to have community in that way. I mean, you can have your small little echo chambers, but I think that that's also another whole issue with the whole move towards social media, and something I've actually talked about a bunch in a bunch of different shows. I think we actually have touched on the show that I did with you, or we had you on our show, the Seas of Liberty, about people being disconnected because of this whole thing, and being on social media. So again, it's even less community tie that way. You have your echo chambers online, but you're not in real life, you don't really have that. I'm somebody who was opposed to that originally, but now I see the value in it, and I'm kind of thinking the same way you are. That's kind of what I'm trying to get back to. And with this PBS article in particular, and the little video that was attached to it, the whole thing about the intergenerational communities, like that's a big pull for me too, specifically because when they were talking about it in the little video about how children interact with older people, which isn't as common in most kids who go to public school and stuff like that. Like outside of the authority figures, they don't have that interaction, and that's always something I've valued about homeschooling and unschooling in general. Like most of the kids that I know that are in that type of program, they're so much more comfortable having conversations with adults because they're used to having conversations with adults. They're not just with kids of their specific age group all the time, like you would be if you're in a school setting. So having that in the community where kids grow up having the ability to talk to people, not just, sure, they can have friends their own age if there's other kids in the community that are their age, but kids of all ages, adults of all ages, so you get that different perspective growing up. I think that's very important, and that's why I think this type of stuff is really important. I mean, overall, and that's why I'm trying to take my kids into a situation that they have that opportunity too.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the most powerful things. Like, one of the greatest things I did was started podcasting, and the reason why is because I started talking to other people, and most of these people were way older than me, so I was learning so much, right? Like that's a really amazing thing to do, because we think that learning happens in a classroom. Like, you have to be shown these things and told them by somebody else while you sit down and take notes. But that's not how it works, right? If you look at the history of humans, the way we've adapted is not to sit down in a classroom and be taught. That's been happening for maybe 200 years. Like, I guess it's been longer, but like realistically in the United States, it hasn't even been barely 100 years, I guess, since they've been having mandatory public school. But my point is that the natural way to learn is to go out and experience it and be taught by the elders in your community, right? The people who if you're learning to hunt, you go out with the hunting expedition, right? Or if you want to learn something, you go out and you go apprentice with the guy who's doing that.
That's exactly how
you learn stuff. Getting to spend time with other people who know what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think that's I was trying to think when you're talking about the how long it's been with the school system. Even when the Prussian model first started getting rolled out here, as you mentioned Thaddeus Russell earlier, he talks about a lot, and I guess that was 1840, 50, somewhere around there, Horace Mann, that whole thing. But even back then, up until a certain point, it was still like, even when they were putting kids in quote unquote school, it was a one-room classroom where at the very least there, you still had kids of all ages together. It, you know, once it became this very regimented thing where, oh, we're going to separate the kids by age and, you know, have them all learn together like this, like that, you know, that just everything went off the rails at that point. You know, I mean, you could still learn in groups. There's nothing wrong with that. But sure, you know, depending on what you want to do, a lot of people, it is a lot easier to learn with hands-on experience. So, you know, whether it's an apprenticeship for, like, you know, whatever it is, you know, back in the day, you want to be a blacksmith, sure, go work with a blacksmith. Whatever it is, man, yeah, it's much easier to learn that way, and these type of communities offer that, which I think is huge. So we'll talk more when we get back. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link at the top right, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it.
Communism. I don't remember where we left off.
We're talking about the school stuff.
And, oh yeah.
And how, well, just in general, not just, you know, school, just in, you know, how being around this type of community where you're, you know, especially for younger kids, when you're involved with this type of community where you're around all these people of all these different ages. Rather than being confined to the majority of your day to a classroom where you're around people all the same age as you, except one person who's this authority figure up in front of you, you know, what the advantages are of that, and how much more you can learn from actually being able to talk to people who have experienced these things rather than just reading out of books and other, you know, reading, you know, which obviously has its place. You can definitely learn things from other, you know, reading about other people's experiences, but gaining knowledge, I don't know. I'm definitely that type of person, you know, learning hands-on, or at least being able to speak to somebody directly about their experiences, that more personal touch, I guess, has definitely always had more of an impact on me. So I could see how it would have the same for a lot of other people.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, I like that idea, and I've kind of realized that I don't get to talk to, that's not really true. I get to talk to a lot of people of a lot of different age ranges, just because I do business, and I really enjoy talking to older people. Like, there's a guy I met at the Dallas Farmers Market that I talk to now, just this older senior guy. He's part of the Lions Club there, and it's just I get to talk to some older relatives, and there's another old family relative that or family friend that bought some yak meat from me, but I really like to talk about them and get to hear about the past. Like, it's just interesting, because I kind of realized recently. And then I guess the last year, it's like, oh, wow, like I don't really know what it's like to live life, because I'm only 20, like 19 years old. They haven't really been on my own at all. And I don't really know what it's like out there. And it's just really interesting to hear other people's stories about what life used to be, or you know, how it was growing up, and just all the things that, you know, I wouldn't know about. So I've been trying to have more of those conversations and be more, I like to ask more questions to older folks. But I don't know, I've learned a lot from it.
Yeah, well, I could see how that works, and I've seen that happen, you know, with different kids and different friends of mine that have, you know, homeschooling, unschooling kids, how just in general, like, it helps prepare kids for that type of stuff, to be able to have those conversations. Because I know plenty of kids who come out of, even, you know, end up coming out of high school and wouldn't be able to have a conversation like you're talking about having with somebody, because they wouldn't even know either where to begin, or, you know, they're in that attitude where they don't think they need people like that, mm-hmm. because they think they've learned everything already from, you know, being smart in school and getting good grades or whatever. But growing up around that definitely has that, again, has that advantage of, you know, making kids in general more comfortable to, you know, have those conversations and be willing to learn too. You know, if I'm pretty sure if I had been able to grow up like that, things might have worked out differently for me, because I grew up in the forced into the school setting where, you know, you're praised for getting the good grades and knowing the right answers. Then you walk out thinking, well, I aced all this stuff, so I must know everything. Why do I need to talk to anybody else about these things? You know, what could they possibly have to teach me? And right. You know, that set me back a bunch of years. So who knows what could have happened if I had that opportunity?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like, that's common. Like I was the same way for a while too. I think that I don't know. I don't. Maybe that's just kind of part of being a kid. Sometimes this is just being a little bit defiant, because. Like, that's where it came from for me. I was like, I don't want to listen to these folks because they're the authority, right? Because they're not going to let me do what I want to do. Why would I trust them? Because they've lied to me before and stuff. Like, I think it's pretty natural. But I think that you're absolutely right. Like, if you can have that space where you have a better relationship, where the relationship isn't that the adults are just the people at the front of the classroom or your parents telling you what you need to do, it can be pretty beneficial if it isn't that way.
Yeah, because it's voluntary.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have to listen to these people's stories. You go because you want to listen to these people's stories. Huge difference.
Yeah.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Freedom Fiends. So we're back. And I think we left off, we're talking about, you know, the advantages of being able to grow up around, you know, people of different ages and, you know, being able to learn all these different things from them. And, you know, the other thing I found interesting, which from the article in particular, article slash video from PBS about this, these different, intentional communities, actually, specifically, I guess they were talking about ones that are propping up in Denmark and a couple of them here in the U.S. One of them, I think, was in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that actually, I guess, kind of applies to me was the fact that they specifically mentioned that these type of communities are designed to combat social isolation, which, you know, refers to the, you know, the number of ties people have, you know, kind of relationships you have, whether it's, you know, religious, community, work ties, all that type of stuff. And, you know, that's another thing that happens in this day and age, and, you know, the digital age. You know, what I was referring to earlier, people being disconnected from one another because, you know, number one, so many people have more interactions on social media than they do in real life. And, you know, you become further isolated from people by not talking to somebody or interacting with somebody just because you have a difference of opinion with them, which, as I mentioned, whether you want to say it's conspiracy minded or not, I mean, I fully believe that's by design, you know, to keep each other people at each other's throats. That's kind of the way how government seems to have worked through all throughout history. You know, it's the best form of, creating along with horizontal enforcement, just creating those divisions that the people in power don't actually have to work that hard because people are, you know, policing themselves in that matter. So having these type of communities kind of necessarily combats that, because you're not just living in a neighborhood with other people that, you know, you may see when you're out mowing the lawn or something, or when you're going out to get the paper, or, you know, coming or going from your house, but actively talking to these people regularly and, you know, helping out with different projects and stuff like that. And if you're having, you know, these straight up communities that they're talking about in this article, where you have these community spaces where, you know, we talked about earlier, you'll get together a couple times a week or whatever it is and actually have meals together. And then, of course, because of that, then you have a giant shared area where it needs to be cleaned up and stuff like that. And people just take turns and, you know, like you would in any other setting, you know, whether you're in, like, I used to go camping and stuff with my friends and stuff like that, and get a big group of people, and like whoever ends up cooking, like the rest of the people end up taking turns, like helping clean everything up like that. You know, division of labor, man, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, like I said, because for me, I've talked plenty of times before that I'm a bit of a hermit, and I kind of like being that way a lot of times. But the whole thing with social isolation that they mentioned, because I think one of these people they're talking to, I guess, is some type of medical expert. But the mortality rates are actually much, much higher in people that have less of these ties. So I guess I have to pull myself out of that and actually go talk to people if I want to live longer, right?
Yeah. I wonder what wonder why. That's interesting. Because I've wondered this, because I've tended to be that naturally. Just I like to be alone. Like that's just kind of the best thing ever for me. I've never been one of those people who just like needs to hang out with folks. Every once in a while, I'm like, okay, I've been around for a little too long, and I should go out and talk to some of the people I know other than my family. But I wonder why I do that, because I do enjoy it. Like, I do enjoy being alone sometimes. Like, I'm kind of introverted. Like, I like to have my alone time. But sometimes I wonder, like, well, how much of a benefit would it be if I just got up and did something? And so I try to, you know, I try to find the balance, but it's difficult because I don't know. It's just kind of less complicated if you don't have to deal with very many people. and it's kind of a perk. But at the same time, yeah, I wonder what that is, because there is this kind of need for human connection, and it's pretty important. And I do think that it's like what you said about kind of having that reliance on the community, like one of the, instead of the state, like one of the things I like is what I think about is like kind of on an activism front is, you know, your neighbor's not going to call the cops on you if you're the guy who brings over cookies or something on Halloween or on Christmas, or you're,
well, my neighbors might
help out. Yeah, you're right. There is those group of people, right?
But in general, yes. In general, I get what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're definitely those people who don't want that kind of help. But that's, and I get like even though you are nice to some people, like there are plenty of people who I've been nice to and totally, you know, I don't want to say stab me in the back, but you know what I mean? Like they didn't care. But like if you can build those relationships, you're much less likely to have that happen. And I don't, And like the thing is, like, there's so, it's so complicated, right? Because you have to have the right culture. Like, you have to have the right, the people have to have the right ideas. You can't have people who are who like a homeowners association and want to control the kind of flowers that you grow in your yard, or how how tall your grass is. Like, that's kind of, those are, that's when the group gets too powerful, where you, they're, you know what I mean? That we're talking about the balance, right? That's too far on the, on that. And you, and there's like certain situations where, yeah, you, it's just better to get out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just funny because I used, when you were talking about that, I was thinking of a wonderful example from my own life that I actually have, which is, there's like an email, like, I don't know, I guess it's some website or some service that's around now that you know, it's like an online neighborhood community, essentially, where you know, the I can't even remember the name of it right now off the top of my head, but I signed up for it a while ago because when I first saw it, I thought it was kind of a cool idea because it was kind of like trying to bring like that idea back, like connecting people in the neighborhoods, like literally in your neighborhood that you may not know because you don't actually get out and walk around your neighborhood like, you know, we used to do back in the day, and you actually know all your neighbors, not just the people to the left and the right of you, but like people, you know, when you live in the suburbs like I do, you know, back in the day you used to know people like all up and down your block. Like, that's become less and less over the years. But when I first saw this, when I first got the email about this originally, I'm like, oh, this is kind of like, you know, it's kind of trying to bring that back, trying to bring that sense of community back. So I signed up originally, and then I quickly realized what you were referring to about you have to having to have the right culture. Because while the idea seems good, like being able to connect so people share, like, you know, you have questions or like, you know, concerns about the community or trying to make things better or stuff like that, like talk about it amongst yourselves and try to have like a unified front type of thing, which, you know, great idea, but unfortunately in this culture it always ends up being back, like running back to like, who can we call in government to fix this, or like, who can we report, like how can we report this person to this agency and like get these people in trouble for doing this thing. And I'm like, oh no, no, it's like so close yet so far away, people. I haven't participated much, but I've just stayed in it just to kind of keep abreast of what's going on. But I just shake my head all the time when I get the emails, and it's just like the way they, like I said, it was such a great idea in theory, but when these people got together, the culture, the status culture, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to they want things fixed, but they're not willing to do it themselves, right? You know, they're trying to look for somebody else to fix it rather than getting together and doing it, which is, you know, completely antithetical to these type of communities that we're talking about.
Yeah. Like, and this is like the thing about like you have to have a bunch of individualists come together and make the collective, right, for it to be any good. And it's not really, you know, we're not trying to make the collective, but you get what I mean. I don't know, like, you kind of have to have like everybody be like, oh, I don't need the group. If it came down to it, I could go off and do my own thing. But and like, kind of the, like, you don't want too much reliance. Like, I don't know, man, I don't know where that balance is, and that's kind of what I'm like trying to figure out. But I think that's, you know, that's part of it, is you have to watch out for that kind of attitude of something's wrong, let's make this system do it. Or instead of taking personal responsibility, like, because to me, I think if you have an issue, it's your responsibility to either ask for help and say, hey, you're doing this to me, stop, or, you know, make it stop. Because, like, I don't know, that's just for me, like, I don't understand why anybody else would care as much as I do if it's my issue, you know what I mean? So I'm going to do it because I want to make sure that whatever it is, like, I get it resolved, because I just don't want to deal with that not happening, right? I want what I want, and I'm going to make sure I get it. And that's, to me, I think the personal responsibility angle there is really important, and I think that's lost when you're using the a democratic system to decide what the design of the houses are in this neighborhood, or what kind of laws can be made in the state, right? Of, you know, in this given area. When you do that, you aren't really working with people. You're trying to use this system. You're trying to use tools to manipulate other people, and that doesn't feel good to other people. People don't like that, so they're going to react, and they're not going to react in the way that you want, probably. And so you just don't build social cohesion that way. The way you do that is say, hey, if you don't like your neighbor's paint color, you'd be like, hey, your house is just ugly. How about this? The Kesbit ruins the value of my house. I will pay to paint your house. That's how you build social cohesion. We'll talk about this a little bit more in the next hour. But I think that's a little bit different than using a democratic system and forcing somebody to paint their house. Help them out instead.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Too busy talking at D-Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's right. What have we been talking about? We've been talking about all kinds of stuff today.
Commie stuff, man. Commie stuff.
Yeah. I think that, like, I don't know. I think my kind of last things on it is that I don't know, like, what's more important. If individuality versus having a community is what's the most important trait. But I do think that if you're going to participate in a group, that you really need to figure out, you know, your own you have to figure out your own personal issues to an extent. You have to know the way you think, because when we get into group dynamics, it's the way we think just changes, I think. And especially if you're given any position of power, like, you have to watch yourself, and you have to be able to do that. And I think that, you know, having mastery of your own individual mind and kind of capabilities, at least knowing, you have to know yourself to an extent, I think. And I think that that's where issues with communities come up with, is when the individual gets abused. And I think that that's the thing, is there has to, if you're going to work as a group, you have to recognize that everybody has their own life and set of experiences and their own property, I guess. You know, you have to respect them at least to an extent, if you want social cohesion, that is, right? Maybe not I'm not going to say it's an ethical axiom, but that, I think that's the best way to divide labor and get stuff done in a peaceful and happy way.
Yeah. I think like I said, I mean, I'm kind of in favor of this type of, you know, setup, at least the one we've been talking about through most of the show. And I'll, of course, post the link to this article in the show notes. But I think, you know, the idea a lot of people have of, like, you know, communal living, I guess, you know, most people think, oh, communism bad or whatever. Sure. I mean, I'm against most forms of communism, at least if they've been played out through history, it's never been good. But like this type of setup, you know, in particular, this co-housing type of thing where everybody does have their own private property and, you know, you may or may not have, you have different communal areas, which again are all people are agreeing upon sharing those spaces. And, you know, as long as you can still retreat to your own area and participate as much as or as you know, a little as you want in the different community activities, then it's definitely going to help the cohesion versus, you know, the type of setup where we're currently in, where whether you choose to participate or not, you're still forced to pay for them. or in one form or another, where in this type of setup you wouldn't be if you didn't want to participate. But yeah, I think it definitely helps, and I'm looking forward to doing something like this. I mean, this is something I've had in the works with a couple of different people I've talked with over the past couple of years, different projects, trying to get something like this up and started, where it really is just, you know, people living in close proximity together and working together, and, you know, not necessarily, you know, for the greater good or the collective or anything like that, but just to help one another out and, you know, help each other get off the ground. And, you know, just the division of labor really does make things go a lot smoother, you know. And, is, you know, I'm kind of like you, is, you know, very individualistic and kind of like to keep to myself, and I prefer it that way. It's kind of why I had the business I did for so long, because I was able just to work with animals and be away from humans generally for large periods of time. But overall, it, you know, I could try to do everything myself, or just with me and my, you know, my little family, but that'll be a heck of a lot of work I'll have to put in, and I'll have less time to enjoy things, and that just seems counterproductive to actually enjoying life. So, you know, if I can band together with some other people, and, you know, maybe I can grow some stuff and they can grow some stuff, and I can raise these animals and they can raise those animals, and, you know, whatever. And, you know, the more the merrier is fine with me. Like, again, as long as you're not locked in, you know, and it's just, it's voluntary. I'm cool with it, man.
Worms.
Yeah. Anyway, so, man, this has been a good, fun show, Nick. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Absolutely.
Glad you brought this topic up. It was a good conversation to have, I think. Hope everybody else enjoyed it. Thank you all for listening. And for more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.